Hi, y'all. I'm Ruth M. I'm an alcoholic. I'm also a tablet taker. In fact, I'm kind of a total addict. If it's worth doing, it's worth doing to excess in us. Get on with it. There's got to be more. That's the way I live my life, drank my booze, pop my pills. That's the kind of person I am. And don't be sure you can hear me way back there in the back, because I come a long way to lay this on you. And I'll be sure you suffer through it just as much as I do. I'm not going to give you my best pitch today. I did that a few years ago down in Costa Mesa one Friday night. And I swear it's the best pitch I ever did give. I just floated right on out of that meeting, fell on my ass, and broke my nose. That's what happens when I float. And if I can remember what one of my good teachers told me early on, maybe I can get me out of the way and we'll get something out of this. He told me it's just 10 inches from a halo to a noose. And that has a very sobering effect on me. I see we got a lot of young ones in here. You probably look at me and say, if I was that old bag, I'd have give up too. But you better believe I didn't come here till this my time. There are no mistakes in this deal. And if we got some new ones and you're warm in one of these uncomfortable chairs, wondering if you're an alcoholic, chances pretty good you are one. Because I never have seen one come through these doors with high social aspirations. We don't come here like that. Sick, sad, and sorry, that's how we get in here. And newcomers, if anybody ever does ask you who them are, you'll know that's an Al-Anon. No alcoholic will ever ask you who them are, we know. Them are they, that's who them are. They had the power to kill us before we got to Alcoholics Anonymous. They no longer hold the power over us. I got up this morning, I turned me over to some joker I can't see, I can't taste, I can't feel, and I can't chew. I said, big boy, here I am. Don't let me get us in nothing you can't take care of today. When I go to bed tonight, I'll thank him. I still haven't seen him, I haven't tasted him, I haven't felt him, and I haven't chewed him. But I know God is because I am. Our ABCs say probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. God could and would have sought. And the closest that I've ever come to the finding has been in the seeking. I believe today if God was small enough for me to understand, God wouldn't be big enough to take care of all the crap I can get us into in one day. So that's God as I understand God. And if you don't understand God, then that's how you understand God. And I'd like to see you wiggle out of that one. I sometimes call this disease by another name. That's optical rectitis. That's a crappy outlook on life. I've always had it and I still get fits of it. I'd rather take your inventory any day than to take mine. But yours almost killed me. I'll still catch me standing in my kitchen window just waiting for my neighbor to walk out her door so I can nail her with her inventory. Why does she wear that dress today? Don't she know that upsets me? She don't know a thing about it. That old cat goes on all day just as happy as if she had good sense. And I'll go out there and hang me on every situation that comes along to prove I'm right in my attitude toward her. And if I just let her be and I be, we get along fine. So I know that I can't change them and that out there. I got to change my attitude toward them and that out there, and that's not easy. Way back in my teens, the school teachers used to say to me, they'd say, Ruth, it's your attitudes and your behavior that get you in trouble. And I would look at them with the most hostility inside of me, which I know today was fear. And I think, you don't understand. You'd get off of my back and leave me alone, everything be all right. And in the end, they all got off of my back and they left me alone. Everything wasn't all right. It was a mess. Even the dogs had turned and slowly walked away. A few years ago, when I got my 14th AA birthday, the gal that led the meeting that night made me godmother of her dog. And that ought to tell you something. And I can't take the credit for it. From the day I threw in the towel and admitted that I had lost the battle of life, life has had to become a given thing. I can take no credit for success. I take no credit for failure. It all has to go into a ball of wax that's a lot bigger than I am. And you know, that's the best deal I ever had. I grew up in an alcoholic home. I've seen alcoholism and all of its ramifications. I've seen the heartbreaks. I've seen the deaths of the practicing alcoholics, and we don't die pretty death. I've seen the attempted suicide. I believe if living in it would have had anything to do with it, many in this room would have never taken that first drink. You know, that has absolutely nothing to do with me having a terminal illness. But I used that. I used it right up to death's door. But you know, it's a funny thing. When there's only one hog left in the hog pen, you can't look at another hog and holler, hog you it. And when I got there, I didn't care how I got there. I don't know how you're going to get out of that. So we come here, and we who are sober and Alcoholics Anonymous today, we no longer live in the problem. Today we live in the answer to the problem. I think I was allergic to my mother from the very beginning. And that woman was allergic to me. She believed in a thing called discipline, and I don't want no part of that business. I was a rebel from the word go. So early on, I made a bid for the drunken father's love, and in his eyes, I could do no wrong. Whatever I would do, I could put on a show for Daddy. He wind up laughing and thinking it's cute. So I went through life putting on a show for them and that out there. They praised me. They could lift me to the heights of heaven. If they criticized, I went to the depths of hell. I know today that I was a prisoner to my own emotions. I was brought up by my grandmother. I was brought up in religious fanaticism. Grandma was all strung out on sin. She preached sin from daylight till dark. If you woke up in the middle of the night, you got another lecture thrown in for good measure. One day I got to thinking, and that's still disaster. I decided if sin was all that bad, it must be good. I tried it, and it was. That's kind of the beginning of the whole mess right there. I never got enough. If it's worth doing, it's worth doing to excess, and us get on with it. There's got to be more. And every Sunday, Grandma would shine me up and take me to that church. She put me right up on the front row. She got right behind me, the preacher right in front of me, caught between the devil and the deep blue sea. They laying it on, and I'm taking it all personal. It was the darndest thing about that deal. Every Sunday, that preacher had a brand new list of sin. And for some damn reason or the other, I'd done all that the week before. So early on, I got a week ahead of my own. the list. And I came to the conclusion early on that God was through with me. He didn't want nothing to do with me. And you better believe I didn't want anything to do with him either. And in the end, I came to hate God. And I'll tell you right now that it's not hard to hate something that you're scared to death of. And mine became the God of the chemical. And for many years, my God was good to me. It did everything for me that I wanted. And if it was still working its magic today, I'd still be out there with it. But in the end, it turned on me, and the answer to my problem became my problem, and I became a slave to my addiction. It called all the plays in the end. I didn't want to get close to God. I knew what he was going to do with me when the body got cold. That's when that big barbecue was going to start. And I was going to be the main dish. And I love my body, and I didn't want them to treat my body like that. So I found alcohol, and I found my answer. My father was a construction man, and sometimes he'd be gone home for months at a time. I miss that drunken father. I used to say I felt like an oddball because I was the only kid in town with a part-time father. That's not the truth. I took advantage of that situation. I learned early on to con, connive, and scheme to get my own way. And that was the only way I knew until I came to you. I was always impressed by the fact when the old man came back from across the hill, he wore Panama hats and white shirts. And my God, that's class. And I love class. He would tell me about the big jobs he worked on outside this claustrophobic little area that we lived in. He would tell me about the people that he met on the other side of the hill. Daddy would sing songs, and I have a most vivid imagination. This was before radio, so it puts me back there. And I looked Daddy over, and I listened to him. And I'll guarantee you he wasn't singing, "Jesus wants me for a sunbeam." And I looked them sunbeam singers over, and it didn't take me long to know which way I wanted to go. I didn't want to be no sunbeam for Jesus. He'll take you and he'll make a missionary out of you. He'll send you over there in the jungle with them people eaters. And I didn't want to be instant breakfast for nobody. Daddy was singing things like, "It's 3 o'clock in the morning and we've danced the whole night through." I said, "Hot dog, come on." God, I know Daddy found it. I used to watch Daddy. He'd get drunk on that homemade black beer wine. And when he got drunk, he'd get that spiritual grin on his face. He'd wet his pants, and nothing ever seemed to bother Daddy. And I looked them sunbeam singers over, and they looked like they half dead from hemorrhoids. Always sitting around worrying about where are we going when we leave from here. And I said, "Well, my God, we haven't lived here yet. I've lived." I was eager to live, and it seemed like life moved too slow, and I was always afraid I'm going to miss out. I'm going to hurry it up. So I found alcohol, and it was the answer, man. In my teens, I'd go out to the country dances. Be the White Lightning, the Cane Skimmings, the Homebrew, and the Boys. If you were a teenager with an inferior complex 2 feet thick and you find out White Lightning, you got something going. I'd get a slug of that corn liquor, and when that stuff hit midsection, my toenails curled up, my eyeballs bugged out, my eardrums flopped in and out. And fire went two ways. Instant Christianity. I came out from behind the wall, and for a little while I lost that feeling of being apart from, and I became one with. Now you find something that'll do that for you, and you're not going to give it up easy. If animals would have done that for me, I would have got hooked on enemas. It wouldn't make any difference. And if you had asked me at that point, what do I want to be when I grow up? I wouldn't have told you that I want to grow up to be a drunk and go to AA. I never have seen one come through these doors hollering, hooray, here I am. Sick, sad, and sorry, that's how we come in. I would have told you I want to grow up to be a fine woman, a good woman. I want to meet a good man. I want a fine husband, fine children. I want money, property, and prestige. That's what, in other words, I want everything instant and perfect. I said when I got out of high school, I'm going to get away from that family that I love and hate by turns. That family that I'm ashamed of. That family that I swore I would never be like them. And you know the rest of it. For God's sake, I got worse than they were in the end. I was going to get out of that one-horse town where everybody's trying to tell me what to do and how to do it. I'm going to get away from Grandma and I shall not. And I'm going on the other side of the hill and I'll find that magical something. By now, I've traded the Holy Bible for the Sears Roebuck catalog. And I know there's a whole lot more of this deal than I'm getting. I've read some whiz bangs and some smokehouse monthlies. And I've seen a few movies. And I'm a pretty intelligent kid. And I'm going out there and tackle it head on. And I knew marriage would take care of that little situation. So I got that high school diploma in one hand. I got my hatchet in the other. And I went husband hunting. They say there's a lid to fit every pot. I believe we deserved one another. He was a hard-working, hard-drinking construction man. I thought he was a tough guy. And I always want to get my hooks in a tough guy. And I'm going to tame him down. And I'm going to get him to eating out of my hand. And then I'm going to kick him in the rear end. Now that's what you call bad attitude. One night I heard him drinking with a crew. He said, I hate women. I wouldn't marry one of them. I wouldn't spend a dime on one. There was the challenge. I said, I'll marry that son of a bitch and straighten him out. If you haven't tried it, don't. Best thing, just leave him alone. First mistake, he made him move in the house with his mother. And for God's sake, I married him to get away from mine. And I had to go live with her. I took one look at her and she took one look at me and we don't like one another. That's two strong forces met head on. I followed two turns. I'll stand and fight or turn tail and run. I chose to stand and do battle with her. Our book of experience says we cease to fight anything or anybody. In italics it says we have. We cannot live with anger. I didn't get angry at that woman. I plotted her death. That's what I did. She would just go on and die and get out of the way. I'd be number one. Old gal born and raised in Smoky Mountains in East Tennessee, and she was healthy as a horse. She went on living a good, useful life. I just went on getting drunk and puking at her, getting drunk and puking at her. We came to California in 1936. I'd seen the movies, and I knew what life was like out here. I said, I'm going to leave them and that back there. I'm going to come out here. I'm going to start over, and everything's going to be all right. Little did I know that I couldn't run away from the problem, that I am the problem, and wherever I go, the problem goes. We brought everything, including my drunken father. I had to bring Daddy with me because I needed him. We lit in Pasadena, and in Pasadena, I saw my first cocktail bars. Grandma had referred to these places as dens of iniquity. God, don't that sound exciting? And I can't get out there fast enough. The crowd took me out and they showed me the cocktail bars and they told me, they said, the gals go in here and sit on the bar stools and mix it up with the guys. I said, hot dog, come on. God, I know I found it now. I never started out to wind up the way I did. Today, I don't know why that factor acts in my body that makes me bodily and mentally different from them, and neither does anybody else. But I give thanks today that I'm one of a few people on this earth that knows I can't handle 1 ounce of booze. Booze handle me. And it would be early in the morning, we all pack in the car like sardines in a can, we head for home, and everybody's got that good Christian feeling. And about then, they get the husbands and the wives all mixed up together. And about time I decided that's not a bad idea, that's when I throw up on all of them. There are people that frown on baptisms of that nature. And it's not long until they go to the party and they don't ask me to go, and that's rejection. That hurts my sensitive alcoholic feelings. And I can't let it come on like that. So I wear my mask, I play my game, and I pretend. And I do my little self-righteous jag. I said I don't want to go with them anyway. I'm so much better than they are. They're trash, that's what they are. I believe that alcoholics are the only people on the face of this earth that can be laying in the gutter and feel superior to everything and everybody around. I had 2 sons of that marriage. I had their whole lives planned before they got out of diapers. Always seeking my fulfillment in somebody else. Never did I want to expose me to life and living in that world out there. I had a price tag on everything and everybody. Prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, where do I fit in? What can I cut out of the deal? What can you do for me? These boys would go to college and they'd be the great successes. People would look at them and say, they are her sons. And I would bask in the glory of another human being. Never wanting to expose me to life and living. And if they got a sore throat, I had their funeral planned before I got the doctor on the telephone. We went into business for ourselves just before the end of World War II. This was a goal we set, something we wanted. We were young, we were eager, we were aggressive, which I know today was greed masquerading itself. And at that point, I went dry. I could plug up my jug still, but I was doing nothing about the disease of alcoholism. And in there, all the old fears, the phobias, the hang-ups, the isms of alcoholism began to hit me full force, and I couldn't cope with them. So there I found another method of escape. I'm an escape artist. I became a workaholic, which I know is a fear-motivated thing. I didn't have time to eat, sleep, anything. You work. So there I didn't take care of the physical being, and I began to experience my first physical crack-ups. Now instead of the liquor store and the bar, I cool my heels in the doctor's office. I'd tell them medics anything they wanted to hear, as long as they gave me their goodies. I'd stay with their goodies a while, put down on them, go back to my first great love, which was my jug. And in the end, I got to mixing them together. And in the end, I came through. That's what we call the end of the line. It didn't happen overnight. It was spread out over a long period. It was slow and it was vicious. And I speak for nobody but myself from this podium. And for me, I think it was mirror images. And I believe I stand as proof today as do thousands on this earth. If you can honestly take that third step, it'll take care of any problem. I don't care what it is. I was 3 years sober. I still find drugs hidden in all over that house. I got every one of them on prescription. I was a busy drunk. You get about 5 of them medics lined up, and you try to figure what you tell the last one the last time you were in there. And what can you tell them they gonna buy this time? You busy. And in the end, if I'd have gone to your house, I'd have gone in your bathroom. I checked your medicine cabinet out. If you'd have had any goodies, I'd have got some of yours, too. And by then, it wouldn't have made any difference what they were. They could have been anything from X-lax to birth control pills, and I couldn't have cared less. And the pitiful part about it is, at that point, I wouldn't have known the difference. And I'm going to stand here today and tell you, in this over 21 and a half years, that I haven't needed a drink and I haven't needed a goodie, because I have needed a drink and I have needed a goodie. But by the grace of something that's going in my life today a lot bigger than I am, I've been able to wait the low times out. And I've never had to wait one of them out alone. From the day I made that call to Alcoholics Anonymous for help, you've been with me. You've been with me in the darkest night, and you've been with me in the coldest day. And we've come through it together in the spirit of love and service. And if it's any consolation to one of you starting a journey anew, I'll tell you that out of each of my dark times, I've come out with a newfound strength, a strength that is not mine. I can lay no claim to it. We became very successful in the business world. We got the breaks. We just shot right on up there, and that ego began to bloom. Now I have more excuses for drinking. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a drunk with a conscience, and I had to rationalize and alibi and justify every drink I ever took, and for God's sake, it made sense to me. It had to. And now I get my little home on the other side of town. I get all the things that I told me as a little kid. If I had that, if I lived over there, if I could run with them. Well, I got it all. The only thing is, when I moved to the other side of town, it took me over there, too. And I entertained a lot. It's a new toy now. But my disease gets worse. It don't get any better. And there came a day when I couldn't get a party together anymore. This was the point where I began to shut the world out. Little knowing, when I shut the world out, that I was incarcerating myself. And that I would live in total incarceration. With my drapes drawn, my doors locked, unable even to walk across the street anymore. Alcoholism is a vicious thing. And they looked at us out there and they said, we didn't care. How could we tell them it was because we cared too much? I never want to forget waking up in the middle of the night in the stark raving terror and the cold sweats and the shakes and slipping out of my bed and never turning on a light to keep from waking the husband up, slipping down the hall in total darkness and reaching in that medicine cabinet and getting that bottle of terpene hydrate or codeine cough syrup and drinking it. I still remember how deathly ill that stuff made me. But for a little while, it numbed this. And for just a little while, I could lose the ability to care. My oldest son was the first one to upset my plans. When he was 18 years old, he went in the Navy. And you better believe I didn't write script like that. Now my little world of protection is breaking apart and I can't cope with it. There's anything the big book makes clear from cover to cover, it is the fact that you cannot deny one of us the right to suffer. I will have four long playing records with ink spots getting in the mood. Into each life some rain must fall, born to lose. You can't break the chains of love. Then there's red sails in the sunset. God, can't you get a lot of juice out of them old sad songs? Now you see I've gone into the next phase of alcoholism. I'm no longer drinking for fun now. Now I'm drinking for oblivion. I'm hopelessly, helplessly hooked at this point. It's my life's blood and I had to have it. Forget to remember I can't handle 1 ounce of alcohol. Now I begin to pull my first little overdosing axe. I was always very careful to have my family there to rescue me. You can get mighty dead messing with that crap if you're not careful. Now my favorite daydream was not to have the big parties anymore, but to attend my own funeral. If I had ever found a way to get dead and keep watching them to see how sorry they are for the way they treated me, I wouldn't be here. But I never found a way to be the corpse and the director at the same time. And that was one show I didn't want to miss. Because my funeral was going to be a big deal. I love class. And all them people I hated was going to be there. And there was a bunch of them I'm obsessed to hate now. And they're going to be looking at the corpse and saying, poor little misunderstood thing. We didn't know she suffered, so we would have treated her better. In other words, they let me have my own way. And all them women I hated was going to be there, and my God, there was an army of them. And I was going to 86 every one of them from my funeral. Been a long time since I went to my funeral. When my son put in his 4 years in the Navy, came home, his first one nailed me with the truth. Thank God for that boy. It was not their protection and their kindness that did it. The three men in my life loved me almost to my death. Today, I believe if they had picked me up and dusted me off one more time, I'd be dead. As long as they nursed me through my sprees, kept my house for me, paid the doctors, the shrinks, and the sanitariums, bailed me out of the bucket and gave me their permission to drink, there's no way I could come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcohol, drugs, pain, and exposure, that's what put me on my knees. He stood and told me from the mother he loved and respected to the pathological lush I'd become that he could no longer stomach. And he turned and walked out of the house. When he got to the door, he turned around and looked at me. He said, "I never won't lay eyes on you again as long as you live." I'm an alcoholic. I laid my son on the line. I drank him up. When I came to you, he was gone. I never expected to see him again. And I'm so very grateful to you that you didn't tell me I'd get back anything I drank up out there. But you did tell me that I could stay sober regardless of anything or anybody out there. My son and me are great friends today. It's been a long time coming. It came in its right time. I couldn't have handled it emotionally any sooner. You see, the old relationship was sick and it had to die. And a new relationship is being born, and it's the best communication we've ever had, and I take no credit for it. Today I can allow him the dignity of being a human being, and he can allow me the same. And that's a real good deal today. I couldn't see at that point that I was one. I knew where they were. I'd been down there on Skid Row and checked them out. And my God, I'm in the best part of town. I got the best of everything. I can see where I set me up for what was coming next. I never finished a drunk. I was always getting ready for the next one. I flew into an alcoholic rage. I went into a dry, and I went out to prove I could take it or leave it alone. He was plain nuts. I sold that home. I moved into an apartment in Downey. I went out, and I bought the mink, the pearls, the low cuts, the high heel shoes, and the long white gloves. And you know that can't be an alcoholic. Did you ever vomit in white gloves?
Yeah.
I stayed in that drive sometime. I did nothing about the problem, and that's me. And one day I got to thinking, and that's disaster. I decide they don't love me. They picking on me. They using me. Abusing me. Poor little me. My book uses two words I don't like, but I have to face them. Emotional immaturity. I was 45 years old, and I ran away from home. I checked in the old St. Francis Hotel in San Francisco. They took one look at it, locked me in my room, sent for my family to come get me. You know something about our disease? Nobody wants one of us around. They certainly no family wants to claim they got one either. Well, my family certainly had one. And I came home and I submitted for psychiatric care. God love the shrinks, we can drive them monkeys up the wall. I went to play with him. That's what I went for. We played for 6 months. Now, you understand I was paying for that. Don't tell them nothing. Let them guess. I've actually heard drunk standard podiums like this and say they got the shrinks screwed up. He committed suicide. I can believe it, too. And don't you let anybody tell you that you're an alcoholic because your mama set you on the potty back. Well, that ain't so. Nobody knows why we are. But thank God we know we are. And they can ask you the stupidest questions. And we can give them the most brilliant answers. You know, like, where's your car? I don't know where my car is. Well, where did you put it? I don't know where I put it. I lost it. And the look on their faces when we tell them that. Now, if you're an alcoholic, you understand. Chance, pretty good you lost yours, too. But out there, they don't understand that. So I learned early on that they didn't want to hear the truth. A lie sound better than being a good people pleaser. I got to be a good liar. And I got so good at it that in the end, I believed my own lie. And nothing makes you madder than to have somebody standing over you in the morning jawing at you. Where you been? Especially when you don't even know yourself where you been. Makes you mad. Well, one day I decided it was her husband's fault. I'd get rid of him and I could shape up. In fact, there was a little more to it at that point than that. If you haven't got there and you're alcoholic, keep drinking. You will. I couldn't live with him, and I couldn't live without him. And good, smart, alcoholic thinking tells you to kill this son of a bitch. And I really believed if I got him off the face of the earth, that'd straighten me out. Now, the only thing wrong with that is that if you married to an alcoholic and you both get that kind of thinking going, that gets to be tight living in the end. I haven't lived that tight since I've been sober. Well, I got tired of being in that dry, and I got bored, and I wanted to run again, and I wanted him back. I needed him. So I kind of sent a call of truce, and we went out to dinner one night, and I was going to take him back on my terms. And we wasn't out to dinner too long till I found out he didn't want back on my terms, his terms, any terms. He'd flat had it. And that's rejection. And that hurt my sensitive alcoholic feelings. And I can't let it come on like that. So I wear my mask, I play my game, and I pretend. He ordered one highball. I took his inventory. And I ordered two highballs. That's the two that reactivated the allergy that set up the craving that sent me back out for two more years of living, breathing hell all the way. Hell, I know I've been there. I've been out with the demons. I've done all of the things that Chapter 3 in the Big Book talks about. I love Chapter 3. That's my life, the way I lived it out there. And today I believe if it's possible for a human being to carry hell around on the inside, it's possible to carry him there, too. I was to do all of the things. And all the time I was there, I thought I was the only one. I thought I was the raking of the earth. Just the very scum. No earthly good to myself or anybody else. And I'm so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. You saved my life. You saved the lives of over 1 million alcoholics on this earth. You told me that I wasn't a bad person, that I was a sick person. Then anywhere along the way, I'd done the best I could do with the tools that I had to work with. And you told me, you said, we are not bad people coming here to get good. We are sick people coming here to get well. And that spelled the difference between life and death for me. I made Oak County Jail in Los Angeles. If you didn't make it, you didn't miss nothing. It was nasty. And they don't treat us with any dignity in places like that. I went in there one afternoon drunker than a skunk, loaded on my pills and meaner than hell. And when the sergeant shook me down, she tried to help me, and that's the worst thing in the world that woman could have done. To me, kindness reaped a weakness. She said, you've got enough money to bail yourself out. I flew into an alcoholic rage. I ran back in all of my dignity. I said, girlie, I don't want to bail me out. I want to see what I've been paying taxes on all these years. And she showed me. And if you're an alcoholic and you haven't been there, you ought to go. That delousing ceremony is very impressive. I came out of there, and on my way down the steps at the county jail, I said to my two sons, just look what your father has done to me now. Less than 30 days, I was in there again. God knows I have no resentment connected with either time. I could have killed myself or somebody else out there. But I don't want to go no more. I just never got comfortable in that. Both times I walked out of that courtroom, both times I walked out of the jail, I walked right back to the bar. And I threw my money down on the bar and I said, play the prisoner song. Both times I walked out of that courtroom, I walked right back to the bar and I got drunk. I had no choice but to go back to the bar and get drunk until I came to you. People could point my problem out. They could tell me there was something wrong with me when I drank. But nobody could tell me what to do about it until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, once in a while I'll be riding around out there during the day. I'll see that old black and white bus with the bars on the windows. And I'll guarantee you I can get spiritual as hell for about 30 minutes. Very impressive, but not enough to keep one of us sober. I made a sanitarium in Culver City. That's just a glorified nut house. I was paying through the nose to go there. I had the bars on the windows and the whole bit. I signed me in late one Sunday afternoon. I was dressed in black. I had my hair dyed black. I had black enamel on my fingernails and toenails. They took one look at it and threw a 24-hour watch on me. And I had vague feelings that I was invisible out there. I went in that joint suicidal. I came out there homicidal. They put me through electroshock treatment, and they shocked everything out of my head but the crap that was in it. Thank God they couldn't get that. You know, if they could take that away from you and me, we wouldn't be going concerns today. Our liabilities of yesterday have become our assets today. Our book puts it in words similar to this. Cling to the thought that in God's hands our dark and miserable past becomes our greatest treasure in life. For with it, we can avert sickness and misery and suffering and death. For countless thousands of men and women as hopeless and as helpless as we once were. It's a gift and it carries with it responsibility. Today I believe that Alcoholics Anonymous is the one bright ray of hope that shines in that dark world of alcoholism and drug addiction. I came out of that sanitarium and I still had some more to go. I said I'll get even with them if it's the last thing I ever do. It almost was and I didn't. And every time I come to, there was some more of them. And now I've taken care of the family. I've got no protection left. I've run them all off now. And every night I get gussied up in my mink, my pearls, my low cuts, my high heel shoes, and my long white gloves. And I head for the bar to do some social drinking. And I'll guarantee you, when I hit the door of that bar room, they knew I had arrived. And I go in there loud, and I plop me down over them bar stools like I had platinum ovaries and take a look around. And it didn't take me long to spot what I was looking for. I was an expert spotter. And I'd find some poor gal a little further gone than I was at the moment. I'd crucify that woman. Good God, get a load of her. I wouldn't be caught dead like that. And you know the rest of it. It wouldn't be 30 minutes or an hour later they hauling me out of there. And I wasn't going out in good condition. I didn't get here in robust health. And I'm going on to ambulances and in the police cars. And by then, I supposed everybody lived that way. I didn't know any better. And now they're 86ing me out of the bars. They said, you go somewhere else. We don't want you here anymore. Every time you come in the bar, there's trouble. And you know, I never went out to make trouble for anybody. I just wanted to do a little drinking and have a little fun. And then my children came to me, thank God they did, and they stripped the fantasies from my jug and my pills. I hadn't been that great, fine mother that my jug and pills let me believe I was. My children told me what life had been like in that home with a drunken, drug-crazed mother. But you know, they didn't have to tell me. I had seen it in their eyes. I had read everything into the eyes of my children that I carried within myself. And the husband came, thank God he did, and he stripped the fantasies. I hadn't been that great, fine wife that my jug and pills let me believe I had been. He told me what I was, a drunken slob. For that I give thanks today. Today I believe that I was born walking toward the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe that I had to come to this way of life. And I believe that everything and everybody that stood between me and these doors had to go out of my life. I had to come here. And as long as they shielded me and protected me from life and living, there was no way that I could admit total defeat. And my scorecard had to read one flat zero in every department of living before I could begin to live. Today I know I had two high standards set for me. I put my standards on top of theirs, and I was set up for failure from the beginning. No human being can live under double standards and survive. I signed the papers in the attorney's office one afternoon. It was to write the end to a 26-year marriage. I'm an alcoholic. I laid my marriage online and drank it up. I didn't get it back. I didn't deserve to have it back. And I can look back today and see it wouldn't have been good for me. I've only been able to keep the things in this leg of the journey that's been necessary for me in this leg of the journey. The rest of it was taken away. And it never came back. I couldn't ask that attorney whether I had a dime coming or whether I didn't. It make any difference at that point. All of a sudden, everything that through life had been so important became like ashes in my hand. It wouldn't buy me one day of what I had to have. It wouldn't buy one day of what I came to you and found for fun and for free. And if there's anything that I would give a newcomer today beyond hope, and that's all I have to give you, God knows it would be patience. Once you lose the desire to live, it don't come back easy. It will come with a proof of that. But, oh, God, it comes slow. Thank God for the old-timers. They sit around. They got the wisdom of Solomon. And they don't say nothing. They just look at you. They know right when to move in. They move in and they give you the 10-11 care. That's a 2x4 between the eyes. And I sat in the groups out in Downey and Monty Beller and out in there. And oh boy, 30 days went by. He sidled up to me and he said, I want to tell you something. He said, it's the nature of this disease of ours. When we get the booze off of our breath, we want our whole life straightened out. Right now, last Tuesday wouldn't have been fast enough. He said, it don't work like that. You've been one whole lifetime getting in the mess you're in. You're going to be the rest of your life one day at a time getting out of it, and I take your running shoes off. You're not going anywhere. You're already there. You know, every once in a while, I don't get me a ticket to nowhere. But I got to stop and say, where is nowhere? And no matter where I went, the first person I would have to be with is me. If I get right with me, wherever I am, them and that out there is no problem in my life. I've had a fantastic life in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's no way on God's earth that I could have come from where I came from and be where I am today. Two hands, one that held a glass of booze and one that clutched a bottle of pills, held a little piece of paper with my name, my address, and telephone number on it when I got here. Alcohol, drugs, and shock treatment had cleaned me out. I was teachable at that point. When the old sponsor came along, I tried to con her. I said, you don't understand. I said, I haven't got a mind. She said, honey, that might not be a bad idea. She said, if you had one, you might not know what to do with it. She said it might get you in trouble. She said the big ball give you enough marbles to get you through one day at a time, and you can't handle any more than that anyway, and don't worry about it. She says, okay, don't worry about it. I didn't worry about it. And from then until now, on a 24-hour basis, the big boys give me enough marbles to get me through one day at a time. And she told me then, and I pass it on to you. She said, honey, you grab hold of your hat and hang on. You don't know what good of the big boys got coming next, but you get ready for it. I got ready for it, I stayed ready for it, and the big boy has never disappointed me. Every once in a while, I'll get a call like this to share in a convention somewhere. And it's a God-given privilege, and I want to thank Wes and the whole committee and each of you for this 12-step call on me. And I pack my car, and I go out to the airport, and I park my car, and I get on the jitney. And I go over to the airport, and I get on the escalator, and I start up. And when I do, I get the feeling. It's kind of a mixture of Florence Nightingale, Joan of Arc, and Jesus Christ, all wrapped up in one. And I get up a little further, and I get to thinking, and that's still dynamite. I think Jesus Christ must have felt like this when he made the ascension. And I go up on a little higher, and I look around at all them people, and I crack up inside. I think, dear God, they don't know what's running loose among them. And they don't need to. You know and I know, and to me, that's the most important people on the earth. I'm an alcoholic. I need to be 12-stepped every day of my life. You're an alcoholic. You need to be 12-stepped every day of your life. We have the gift of 12-stepping one another. There's no price tag on it. Our book says, freely you have received, freely give. And we never know the joy of living until we start to give. I'm going to tell you about my pot, and then I'm going to sit down. I haven't grown a whole lot. I go up one step, back two, up one, back two. My higher power don't let me get too much smarts at one time. He knows I can't handle them. I've got an old stove with the drawers made in it. It came out of the factory like that. Now, if I could accept a situation like that and walk away, I'd be telling you a different story. I'm not stacked up like that. And I got this one drawer full of pots and pans. They just shoved down in there any old way. No system to nothing. And one night I want to get this little pot out of the stove. I jerked the drawer out, and when I did, the pot went down behind the stove. Then I reached down there, and I can feel that pot with my hand. I couldn't get it. And I grinned that silly little grin. Oh, it don't make any difference, you know. Well, about then, that second wave hit, and that's pure panic. My God, I really can't get that pot. And about then, the phone rung, and it was one of the guys, and he wanted me to come share in a meeting. And I got a big calendar with big numbers. I don't want to miss nothing in this leg of the journey. I didn't miss nothing out there. And I looked at the calendar, and I couldn't even see the numbers to tell him when I'll come to the meeting. And I'm thinking, why don't you get off of this telephone? Don't you know that I've got to get that pot? And he don't know a thing about that pot. But I think he ought to, and he ought to go away and let me go get that pot. I finally got him off the telephone. I made a dive for the stove. Situation hadn't changed a bit. I wrestled with that pot till I was totally exhausted. And I went to bed that night and I couldn't go to sleep. And you just sleep in little fits. My God, I've got to get that pot. Next morning, I didn't have time to pray and meditate. I didn't have time to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. I've got to get that pot. Soon as my eyes flew over, I hit the floor flying. They died for the stove. Situation hadn't changed a bit. I wrestled with that pot till I was totally exhausted. Shot my whole day and it hadn't even started yet. Now, you could go to Pick and Save and get a pot like that for $1.25. But it wouldn't be that pot. Then go along pretty good for a day or two. I think about that pot. And when I think about that pot, all hell breaks loose. And it'll usually hit at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And I come straight up out of the bed. My God, there's the pot. One morning, God spoke to me loud and clear. He said, Ruth, I want you to go and get you a new stove you don't need. So you can get that little pot you don't use. So I learned that I have to cool these direct messages from God. Most of the time, it's a 7-year-old emotional delinquent just terrified of the word no. To me, it meant total, final, terminal, complete forever and ever and ever. I know today that I can do anything I want to if I want to pay the consequences. Sometimes tab's too high and I don't want to pick it up. I've got to step aside. And I've got to say, thy will be done. You know I don't mean it. But I just go on saying it like I do mean it till I mean it. Then one more lesson becomes a blessing. I have one more experience in living to share with somebody else a little further down the line. God will pick the time and he'll pick the place. And he'll bring us together at the level of the group. And as far as I'm concerned, the group is the heart of God. Our traditions say a loving God. As he expresses himself in our group conscience. Nowhere in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous have I ever found that it speaks of anything but an all-kind, all-loving, all-living, all-forgiving creator. Unconditional love. And if I buy one word of the big book, I have to buy that. So newcomers, we don't care where you're coming from. If you be alcoholic, and you know you're alcoholic, Alcoholics Anonymous is your Alcoholics Anonymous. It's for drunks, by drunks. And we don't care what you did on your way here. If we didn't do the same thing you did, it's just because we were busy doing what we were doing at the same time. And we hope you'll come and take your place among us and let us love you. We don't even expect you to love us when you come here. For God's sake, we couldn't love either. I'd have chewed Grandma's legs off at my first meeting. But because somebody first loved us, we can love you today. So you come, and I hope we can make the journey together. You come and let us walk close to you. So we can see God in you. And I want to thank you for this 12-step call on me. Newcomers, you grab hope. You hang on like a tick on a hound dog, and no man ever thing gonna be all right. God love you. Thank you.